I'm done doubting Russell Wilson. But his ability to stay calm and lead drive, whether it's week two or the playoffs or the Super Bowl, he always puts them in a position to be successful.
And Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over, baby.
Touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl.
This is Hawks Talk.
Morning, Seahawk fans, and welcome into Hawks Talk here on CSN. I'm your very tired host, Joel Gunderson, and if you're listening, chances are you're tired too after a late game last night. And folks, I'm going to be here with you for the next 20 to 25 minutes. In that time, I'm going to attempt to explain what we witnessed last night. Now, I fashion myself to be a fine storyteller, but this will test my abilities like never before. So, short version, Seattle's offense, which had been on a roll the past 3 weeks, was nearly historically bad last night in their 6-6 tie in overtime in Arizona. 47 yards and 2 first downs in the first half, 130 yards total during regulation. Folks, they didn't even cross midfield offensively during regulation. That's how bad things were last night. Eventually, we went to overtime, knotted at 3, because for as bad as Seattle's offense was, if you watched it, you know this, Arizona's wasn't much to write home about either. And if regulation wasn't painful enough, overtime was simply a comedy show of errors. Because suddenly the script was then flipped. No team could stop the other one. Both teams marched up and down the field. And before we know it, 2 field goals, we had it 6-6. Then things went NFC West after dark on us. You know, Pac-12 after dark and all the stuff, that crazy stuff that happens in college football. Well, this was NFC West after dark. It was absolutely bananas. In the final 4 minutes of overtime, both teams missed chip shot field goals. Point blank, easy, make them 98 out of 100 times field goals. Now, for Arizona, this was kind of a microcosm of their worst fears rolled into one. It has been a horrendous year, special teams-wise, for the Cardinals, and especially in the field goal game. And that's a big reason why they sit here today at 3-4 and not 5-2 or even 6-1, as good as they are. Mercifully, the NFL rules don't allow for a second overtime, because last night, this was undoubtedly one of the ugliest football games of all time. And that sounds like an exaggeration, but it's not. And the funny part is despite the fact that it was so ugly to watch, it was really kind of gripping watching these two teams go through what they did. Perhaps it's the budding rivalry between the two teams. Maybe it's the fact that the division race is tight and this was a really important game, even early in the season. But most of all, there was a level of ineptitude that these two teams were displaying that was so out of character for both that watching it felt almost otherworldly. As you can imagine, I spent a good amount of time on Twitter during the game, and they were having a blast. And I follow a lot of sports writers and comedians alike. And so by the end of the game, the most ridiculous scenes were being thrown out there for how the game would end. And the way things were going, none of them seemed too outlandish, because it was so, as you were watching it, you just kept wondering, how is this happening? The missed field goals, the complete ineptitude of both offenses, it almost seemed like they were trying to outdo each other and one-up each other in just how bad they could perform. So for Seattle, though, this was kind of a mixed result, because with a win heading into the game, they had a chance to really put the clamps down on the NFC West. Yesterday, Los Angeles lost to the Giants in London. So the door was wide open for them to hold a 3-game lead on pretty much everybody in the division. That doesn't even count San Francisco, who's so far out of it. And they have an easy schedule the second half of the year as well. So they really had a chance to not only have a 3-game lead over Arizona, but then they would control the tiebreaker. Go, you know, so far, one game in, they still have to face them one other time for the year. But however, when they go back and watch this film, I think they'll be dancing all the way into next week with the result, even though it was not what they wanted coming in. Because you don't play as bad as they did, and it was as bad as I'm making it out to be, and win games. It just doesn't happen. Very rarely do two teams simultaneously give such bad performances on the same night, so Seattle got very lucky. Now, they made a lot of that luck happen, as we'll get into eventually. Their defense was just as stout as Arizona's, if not more. But aside from the offensive woes, penalties were a huge factor in Seattle's lackluster performance, and it's something we want to keep an eye on going forward. On numerous occasions, big plays or timely first downs were completely wiped out by penalties, many of them coming in the fourth quarter, especially when they had an opportunity to win the game. And it was interesting because as bad as things were in the first half, I don't think the offensive line played that bad. Now, they didn't play good, mind you, but Arizona's defensive line is stout, and I thought they actually held their own a little bit considering they came into the game as by far the weak link on the team and one of the more porous units in the entire NFL. But as the game wore on, guys from Arizona like Chandler Jones and Calais Campbell, they really started to eat them up, especially the left side, the younger side there with Jermaine Afidi. And because of that, we really started to see a lot of holding penalties started taking place. Seattle was getting tired. It looked like the offensive line was really wearing down against the pressure, which is the exact opposite of what should happen. Now, if the offensive line and the offense are clicking, it's the defensive line that gets worn out. And you see it all the time, especially in college, where these teams run the spread offenses and they try to go faster and faster and faster, and you want to keep the defense on their heels. And eventually, the offensive line just wears them down because they know where they're going. So they can dictate pace, they can dictate tempo. But in this situation, Arizona's defensive line was the one pushing Seattle around. They knew where they wanted to go, and they didn't care what Seattle's plans were. And especially when you consider the fact that Seattle's offense wasn't on the field that much at all during the game. They only had the ball for 28 minutes total, and that includes the entire overtime session, which they had two full possessions. So they shouldn't have been fatigued, but that's how it was appearing. They ended the game with 10 penalties for 90 yards, which is not egregious, but it was more of the timing of the penalties that got them. They'd finally break out on a 20-yard run. Sure enough, they'd be holding. Russell Wilson would break free and complete a pass, holding, or an offensive pass interference, or an offensive holding. It was the timeliness of the penalties that were so damning for them. Now, one good thing to take away has been the case all year, and really for the last few years, was the performance of the defense as a whole. The defensive line especially was harassing Carson Palmer all night long. Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, Frank Clark, they never allowed Palmer to get comfortable in the pocket, which is where he'll eat you alive, even at his age. Their pressure, and Bobby Wagner deserves a ton of credit too, because he had a whale of a game. He actually blocked a field goal in the first half where he jumped over the center and dove essentially into the placeholder, knocking the ball so he couldn't even get the field goal off. He was incredible. But they really forced Palmer out of the pocket all night long. And he's simply not the same quarterback when he's on the move. He never has been, let alone, you know, getting up there in age. So as bad as the offense was, the defense was just as good on the other end of the spectrum. And if they weren't, we'd be talking about a blowout loss because, yes, it was so bad offensively. Because not only was Seattle not holding onto the ball for long periods of time and not gaining any yards to boot, but as I mentioned, they didn't even cross midfield offensively. So their lone regulation field goal came after a blocked punt. So they didn't even have to move the ball very far. And I believe on that field goal possession, I don't know if they even got a first down. So they were continually putting their own defense in a hole by being on the wrong side of the field position battle, which for a normal defense would be straining and really wear on you mentally throughout the game. But Seattle's defense didn't blink, not once. Really, really impressive. Probably their most impressive performance of the season. Now, Arizona finished with 443 yards, but that stat doesn't really begin to tell the story because the Seahawks made them earn every single one of them. And a big key coming into the game was containing David Johnson, their running back. He ended up finishing with 113 yards rushing, but it took him 33 tries to get there. Now, Johnson has been the bell cow for Arizona of late, and he's their home run hitter. Every time he touches the ball, he has the potential to take it somewhere. So bottling him up was essential, and they did that. I believe he ended up with like 3.3 yards per carry, if that's what it works out to, or something like that. But not one time did he get to break free and get out in the open field. And I think the one time he did, there was a holding penalty on Arizona as well. So they were kind of in the same boat in terms of shooting themselves in the foot. This was truly one of the more bizarre games that we've ever seen. And yeah, I've been watching football for 31 years. People out there have been watching it a lot longer than I have. But just the reaction from fans and media people like were like, with the offensive firepower that these two teams possess, potentially, especially Seattle, the way they've been playing as of late, and Arizona's always got a good offense under Bruce Arians, a 6-6 tie was the last thing you expected heading in, and that's through overtime. I mean, you know, it's one thing to get there in regulation. You think, boy, that, you know, this is really out of character for it to be 3-3 after overtime, and then neither team find the end zone the entire game. I believe I read a stat that it was the first game, the first NFL game to end in a 6-6 tie or end in an overtime tie without a touchdown in over 30 years. So it's not surprising it's been that long, because you just don't see it nowadays, especially with the way the rules are bent towards the offense. The defense really can't put their hands on anybody, and it's all tailored towards the TV and the entertainment value. So seeing 6-6 games just does not happen. Now, after the game, a very, I'll say, humbled Pete Carroll took this stand. And it was interesting watching him and seeing the difference between him and Arizona coach Bruce Arians during the game. So Arians always looks like he just kind of ate something bitter. Like, nothing really ever makes him happy. I don't think I've ever seen him smile. But Carroll, as we all know, is an upbeat, jovial person. And he actually seemed to be enjoying the product on the field last night, as opposed to the many people who were watching. He kind of revels in chaos a little bit and being outside the norm. And this game was that. And he obviously has a defensive background, so he had to have been enjoying, at least, if nothing else, he was enjoying what his defense did. Here he is after the game.
Well, that was really an amazing football game. I don't think I've ever been in a tie before, and my brain doesn't know where to go on that. If I have, I don't remember it, and I washed it out. It was an incredible match of two teams just battling, and stayed so close because both defenses played so well and kept us in there and gave us a chance. There were so many sequences in there. I know our defense, right before the half, I mean, throughout the whole first half, and then right before the half, to keep them from getting on the board. And then again and again and again, there was just so many chances where we could have let up and given them an opportunity to bust it out and win. The guys just wouldn't do it. The Kelsey McCray tackle down there to give us a chance to stop them, and then hanging in there and fortunately getting out of there. The blocks on the punt, the block on the field goal, incredible special teams plays. Hausch made his kicks to give us a chance, and unfortunately didn't make the last one. And he'd been making kicks for years around here, and everything was in sequence, everything went okay timing wise and all that. We just didn't hit it, but he's going to hit a lot of winners as we go down the road here. It'll be much different and we'll get different outcomes in that one. I thought it was just an unusual game, and I don't really know what to tell you other than that, but I don't even know what a tie means. You know, I don't even know where that fits in the course of things. But two heart fighting teams battled out tonight, and yeah, unfortunately, nobody won.
You stopped and talked to Steven before you got here. You mind sharing what you said to your
team? Just checked in with him. You know, he's been making kicks for us for years, and I love him, and he's our guy. I was watching it. I don't know if you noticed, I was watching the sequence. If we weren't right, if our timing wasn't right, if we weren't right in the kind of sequence that we normally are, I would have called time out there because I didn't want us to rush anything. And everything looked fine, and we were clean. And so I thought the best thing is to let our guys do what they always do. And, of course, we figure we're going to make it.
What was that tell you about your defense? 90 plays to hold that team to 6 points.
Oh, incredible. It was incredible all night long. And it starts right up front. They ran a million plays right in the freaking A gap and stuff it at you, and we just kept slugging it out. It was just an incredible display of who they are and what they're all about. These guys have been fighting together for a long time, and you can tell. You can tell. It means the world to them. And they fought like that until there was no time to play. So it's just an incredible bunch of guys.
What was your impression of the way Sherman, particularly on Fitzgerald, made some big stops?
I don't know that I can single out Sherman any more than anybody else. I thought everybody played great. They had to, you know. But I'm sure Richard did some really good things. And of course, under the circumstances of covering Larry, Larry's an incredible football player. You know, we all know that. And so it takes everything you got to slow him down, and he did that. But there was a bunch of guys that made plays tonight, and Richard made his share.
What were the issues on offense that prevented you guys from getting
there? Well, we just couldn't get in sync at all. And we couldn't get any kind of sync at all in the first half. We were just – and when we made a play, we had – all of a sudden the penalty started jumping up on us, and we must have had three or four holes. I don't know. Was it four maybe? Five, yeah. It was. They really were costly in a really tough, tight game. They impacted our drives with first and 20, and we weren't able to make it back. So – and so we just was no rhythm. So we just started over again at halftime, and so that's just the way we went about it.
Pete, realistically, watching Russ, how much is his ability right now?
It's a factor. It's a factor. But he played his heart out. You know, I don't know how harder you can ask a guy to play. He's not making any yards running. That's just look at the stats. You know, it's really simple to tell.
But Riley saw what happened to him.
He sprained his knee. He had an MCL sprain. I don't know how serious it is, but he's hobbling a little bit right now.
Russell Wilson would finish with a decent stat line, 24 of 37 for 225 yards, but again, does not look 100%. And I'm beginning to wonder, now that they've gone through the bye week and they're beginning a gauntlet of games, if he's ever going to get to the point where he's even 90% going the rest of the season. Now, he says he feels great and that he's 100%. It's just simply not true, though. You watch him, he's not the same guy he was before the injury last year or the first half of the first game this year when he got hurt. So, luckily, he's improved enough in the pocket that we might not see a huge drop-off because that part of his game has improved while the other part now is non-existent. But really going to be important to watch him going forward. So Seattle now sits at 4-1-1 on the year, and like I said, this was a really golden opportunity for them to take command of the NFC West. One, they'll probably kick themselves for not taking advantage of, especially, you know, if they end up dropping a game or two later in the year that they shouldn't, and Arizona catches fire, you know, this game could really come back and haunt them. I don't think it will, because as we've highlighted throughout the year, their schedule going forward is really tailor-made for, I believe, a 10-0, 9-1, 8-2 finish. I mean, they have to go to New England, which will not be easy. But other than that, I do not see a game on the schedule that they, on paper, should lose. So this is one that they really had to get. And I guess, if you can't get a win, the next best thing is a tie. But really, really kind of kicked themselves there for not taking advantage of it. But coming out of last night, here's three things that I learned from their 6-6 tie in Arizona. He's 30 years old, but Michael Bennett is playing the best ball of his career. Now, if you look at his numbers last night, he only had 3 total tackles, 2 of them solo. You wouldn't guess he made much of an impact, but when you watch him at this point, it's a treat. He is absolutely havoc-wreaking. Now, sure, as we pointed out in the broadcast, and they talked to Bruce Arians about it, he is offsides quite a bit before the snap, which gives him a slight edge, and that's why so often he is the first one off the ball, because chances are he's leaning a bit too far over the line. But when he's motivated, which is almost always the case because of his temperament, teams cannot leave him alone in one-on-one coverage. And the tone he sets for the rest of the defense is frightening for the other team because he doesn't give a damn about anybody in the other colors. And that is so contagious, especially for the personalities on the rest of the defense. They're guys that thrive on emotion. They thrive on having a chip on their shoulder, and nobody on that team, and I would go as far as say nobody in the league thrives off of disrespect like Michael Bennett does. Number 2, Seattle's running game will at this point be non-existent all season. So we're 6 games in, nothing is changing. The offensive line is who they are. The running backs are who they are. Christian Michael finished with 52 yards on 6 carries. Alex Collins had 1 carry for 2 yards. That was it. CJ Prosise had 1 carry, 0 yards. Russell Wilson sacked for 2-yard loss. No one else did a thing. Now, Seattle's found a weapon in Jimmy Graham, but they have completely lost one in their entire running game. I mean, for so many years, they had Marshawn Lynch and quality backups and Sean Alexander before that. Now, that is all gone. And I don't, you know, whether or not the offensive line will improve at all, we don't know. Like I said, they didn't look terrible on Sunday, but they didn't run the ball. They didn't make a conscious effort to run the ball because they couldn't get a lot of big chunks. They were chipping off two here, two there, three here, but nothing is clicking. They cannot open the right holes. They can open a slight crack, but they're not getting enough for these guys to get through to get any kind of momentum, which if they could just do that would open up so many other things. I mean, as good as Jimmy Graham is, and as important as it is now that they've found a tight end, they're going to have to try to find some semblance of a running game, but I just don't see it. I really do, and I think they're going to be as one-dimensional a team as the NFL has. Number three, I mentioned last week that Richard Sherman's performance was troubling a little bit the way he played last week, and that if it continued, it would be something to be concerned about going forward. Now, he played better last night, but he still got dinged for a couple penalties, and he was still beaten by Larry Fitzgerald on more than one occasion, which, you know, yes, Larry Fitzgerald is a future Hall of Famer, but he's certainly not what he was at one point. And Richard Sherman, physically, mentally, should still be in his prime, but there is something off about him right now. He's not playing with the same fire that he used to. He's not playing with that same passion, and I don't know. You know, he's been one of the more outspoken guys in the NFL this year as far as off-field things with the national anthem and social issues, and which is great, and that's good that he is a voice for it, because he's such an incredibly smart person that you want people like him to be the voice of reason a lot of times. But you almost wonder if maybe some of that is seeping into his play on the field. He's lost his edge. And I have no basis for this. I have no factual inside information. But I just wonder if maybe some of the off-the-field things that he is working on and trying to be involved in is taking away a little bit of that swagger he used to play with. And now he's got more outlets to channel his anger and channel his feelings and channel his thoughts that he used to reserve for just on the field. So that's just something that I've noticed. And, you know, the jury's still out on how he's playing overall. I mean, obviously, you know, until you get in the coach's room and talk to them and break down film with them, they're the ones that are really going to tell you how he's playing. But we're just talking about from our eyes here. But for 2 weeks in a row now, he's been less than his normal standard. And I think it's something important that we need to keep an eye on going forward, because he's no longer the best player on defense. I think that could be reserved for either Bennett or Earl Thomas, or Cam Chancellor, who is important to note that was still out yesterday. So as good as they played, they're still missing Cam Chancellor. But he's still such an important cog to that wheel. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Next week, Seattle heads down to the Bayou for a showdown with the 2-4 Saints. Now, this is an interesting matchup, if for no other reason than we don't know what or who the Saints are. Yesterday, they took the Chiefs to the wire in Kansas City, which is absolutely no easy task, and Kansas City is rolling. So they're dangerous, but they're just as likely to get blown out on their own turf. And it's a 10 o'clock kickoff out west, which no matter how early Seattle gets there, their body clocks are still going to be off, and that's always tricky for West Coast teams going down to the East Coast. So if Seattle comes out prepared, they'll be just fine, because they're a much better team than New Orleans. But if they sleepwalk at all, this is still Drew Brees, this is still Sean Payton, and they can still lay it down. Coming up this week on CSN, I'll have my Tuesday article. We'll break into some, you know, off the field things that are of interesting notes that going on with Seattle. And then Thursday as well, we'll get into a game preview, give a score prediction, and we'll touch in on the fantasy side of things. How are Seattle players doing? Who's someone that, if you do play fantasy football, would be someone important to check into next week? So thanks again, as always, for listening. Hope you have a great week. And hey, go Hawks.